This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free. The chains holding me. Is anybody out there hearing me? Set me free. Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here, and welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us on this battlefield we call life these days. And I want to start today with a little story of an experience we had. Back in 2006, we ran a billboard campaign here in Colorado Springs, and the billboard said in big, bright letters, "Struggling with porn, you're not alone, so are 66% of the men in church." And then the URL, blazinggrace.org. And back in 2006, we got a lot of good response, people reaching out for help, And I think I only got one negative response that I remember. One woman wrote me and ripped me apart because, quote unquote, I was giving the church a black eye for saying that it had a problem with pornography. But overall, back in 2006, 95% of the responses we got were good. People saying, thank you. We need this. We need to bring this to the light. So fast forward to 2018. We run another billboard campaign here in Colorado Springs. Pretty much the same design, struggling with porn, you're not alone, so are 66% of the men in church, blazinggrace.org, and this time we got ripped, mainly by Christian parents writing me and saying, how dare you put this up in public? I had to tell my 9-year-old son or my 9-year-old kid what pornography is. Our response was, hey, on several fronts. First off, if your kid is 8 or 9 and you haven't had the sex talk with them, it is too late. Because kids are getting smartphones at the age of 3, 4, and 5 now. And your 6, 7, 8-year-old is going to be going to school. And guess who's going to show them the wrong pictures on their phone, their friends at school? I had my sex talk with my son, who is now 32, when he was 8. And I just remember, I told him, you know, how it worked. And he said at the time, ooh, gross. And I told him, it is not going to be a matter of if you get exposed to pornography. It is a when. And when that happens, I want you to come to me, tell me what you saw. Because if you keep it hidden, it will get a grip of you, grip on you. I will not shame you. I will not lecture. I will not preach. Those are big mistakes, moms and dads. I will walk with you. So again, when, not if. And guess what? 2 weeks later, he goes to a sleepover with a bunch of boys at a Christian home. These are all Christian kids. And mom and dad go to sleep, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock. And guess what they're watching at midnight? Sexually provocative content. 8-year-old, my 8-year-old son, 20 years ago, more than 24 years ago. And then he came to me and I was so blessed. He said, Dad, I saw this. This is what happened. And I said, great. This is exactly how you keep this shut down, how you kill the pull, the temptation to hide it. That's what causes it to grow. So moms and dads, let's come to terms with reality here. Your kid will be exposed to pornography, and it will not take as long as you think. And you know what, moms and dads? 75% of first exposure to porn happens at the home, in the Christian home even. I interviewed Michaela here on our radio show couple months ago, and she shared how she grew up in a strong Christian home, and at the age of 11, didn't take her long to figure out how to find pornography. She got hooked. Her parents had no idea, and it was an addiction that went on for years. So back to the billboard story, what has happened to us that we went from thank you for bringing this to the light to shut up? We don't want to talk about pornography. So what do you hear in a lot of Christian media these days? Think about marketing slogans, because when marketing teams come up with a slogan, they're trying to hit a certain button that's going to resonate with people. So a couple of them are like safe for the whole family. And another one is positive and encouraging. So a lot of what we hear in Christian circles is keep it positive, keep it encouraging, keep it comforting. Don't upset anyone. Your home is safe. There's no such thing as spiritual warfare in your home. Satan's not going to get in your home. So we have to really internalize, what am I really believing here? And moms and dads, the enemy knows how to get into your home easily. And some of you more than likely have marriages that are just being torn apart right now, and you don't understand that you're under the spiritual battle of your life. And how often do we really hear spiritual warfare talked about? Many of our churches. And when I talk about spiritual warfare, I'm talking about more than a once every 4 years message on the armor of God in Ephesians 6. I'm talking about equipping God's people in this arena, understanding that the enemy is coming after your kids, and he knows the right moment to put the wrong website right in front of them. And moms and dads, every single Christian family is going to be, at some level, is going to have to deal with this at some point. So it's so critical to understand we are at war. I begin these broadcasts saying, battle. We are in this battlefield we call life. Each and every one of you who are a true sold out Christ follower, you are at war, and the enemy wants to keep you shut down, shut up, and in this kind of little marshmallow cocoon that everything's great, keep you nice and comfortable and soft, and nobody says anything that ruffles any feathers, and let's always be positive and encouraging. And hey, we're encouraged to encourage each other. And Apostle Paul, encourage one another in the faith. So if that's a good thing, but we need grace and truth. We don't go for grace and then disconnect from truth. That's how you get your butt kicked. And that's why so many people are getting their butts kicked today. So we have to realize that the battle we're in, the enemy is going out. Youth, teens, especially with this stuff. It is extremely rare when I hear of a guy who got hooked to porn when he was in his 40s. Usually it's always somewhere between the age of 8 and 12. So you got to be aware of this, moms and dads. So recently I was walking through a book, and in it the author talked about Caleb and Joshua and how they... they were sent out as spies in the Old Testament. This was in the book of Genesis, or actually Numbers. And they were sent out as spies. They were 2 out of 12 to scope out the promised land God gave them. And they returned and said to the people of nation of Israel, hey, this is a great country, a lot of fruit here, a lot of, you know, good soil, trees, fruit trees, everything, but the people in the land are like giants, and we're like nothing in their sight. And then what happened was fear just ran through the whole congregation of Israel. It doesn't take fear long to just spike, and it's like a virus. And they all started panicking and freaking out, and God, you hate us. They even said those words. I can't believe it. After seeing all the stuff that God did for them, splitting the Red Sea and following them in a cloud and also a cloud of fire and all these things, and they just freaked out, said, no, we want to go back to Egypt. And then that really ticked God off. And then the why is shown in the book of Numbers. So in chapter 32, beginning at verse 6, but Moses said to the people of God and to the people of Reuben, shall your brothers go to the war while you sit here? Why will you discourage the hearts of this people of Israel from going over into the land the Lord has given them?" And this is a recounting of the story at this point. "Your fathers did this when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the people of Israel from going into the land that the Lord had given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled on that day, and he swore, saying, 'Surely none of the men who came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob.' And here's the key: because they have not wholly followed me," wholly followed me, all in, "none except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and the Kenizzite, Joshua, the son of Nun." Those two are going to enter, for again, they have wholly followed the Lord. "And the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness for 40 years until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was gone." The key here is wholly followed the Lord. And the frightening thing is 2 out of 12, that's 15%. They got it. 2 out of 12. We're wholly all in with God. And the way you do that is you have a strong prayer life. You're not wasting a lot of time with pleasure or entertainment or sports. Your whole mindset is, "I want to make my life count for eternity. I'm going to take new ground for God. I'm not going to sit back and waste my life. I'm not going to retire and lay back in the weeds and putt around the house. I'm going to pour my life out into the very end." But, and as I walk through this, I also realize there are other places in Scripture where the numbers are pretty small of those who really have that wholehearted mindset. So another example is Elijah. You remember he went and he had that incredible victory over the 400 prophets of Baal and stood up against them, the king Ahab and everyone around them, and then saw them slaughtered, fire from God from heaven. Incredible. I mean, most incredible, one of the most incredible events in all of Scripture. And then after that, Jezebel threatens to kill him. Elijah panics in fear. He was really just crashing and tired and worn out. He runs alone to a cave, and then God says to him, "Elijah, what are you doing here?" And then Elijah said to him, "I'm the only one left. Basically, I'm the only one who's following you." And then God said, "There's still 7,000 people left." But 7,000 out of a nation of hundreds of thousands, that's a small remnant. So again, we got a very small number who get it. And there's also another passage, 1 out of 10. This is from Luke 17, beginning in verse 11. "On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance and lifted up their voices, saying, 'Jesus, Master, have mercy on us.' And when he saw them, Jesus said to them, 'Go and show yourselves to the priests.' And as they went, they were cleansed. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice." One. "And he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus answered, 'Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?' And he said to them, 'Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well.' Only one out of the 10 received that blessing from Jesus." Think about when Jesus was crucified. How many of the 12 apostles went to the cross with him? One. John. And that was with women. One out of 12. Went to the cross with him. The rest ran in terror. Who encountered Christ first after his resurrection? One woman, Mary Magdalene. The apostles at that point were holed up in a room somewhere. Think of the parable of the sower. There's the seed that hit the rocky soil, which represents people with rock-hard hearts. There is the seed that goes into shallow soil, and then it springs right up into growth with joy. But then when it's tested with suffering, it shrivels up. And then there's the third seed that gives growth, but it's choked with the cares of this world and the worries of this world, and it's not effective in bringing forth fruit. And I remember I used to think I would read that parable, and I would kind of put myself a lot into that third category. Yeah, I'm going to church, I'm doing the Christian thing, but I just feel choked. I just knew something was wrong, that I wasn't who I was supposed to be, could be, should be. And like the average American, I was spending more than 2,000 hours a year in entertainment, video games, watching movies, sports, all that stuff. And I was choked, and I wasn't bearing much fruit. And then there was the fourth guy, and he called it the good soil, who brings forth, and it gives it by different measures, some to 30, some to 60, some to 100-fold. And I almost thought, I want to be that guy. I don't want to be the other three. But in reflecting on this and the numbers we talked about, 1 out of 4. And then a moment ago, 1 out of 10, 2 out of 12. We have to really take a hard look at ourselves. Where am I really today? And pastors tell me that 20% of their flock give 100% of their tithes. So, my friends, your checkbook reveals your priorities, not just your talk. So if there's never any checks cut to support God's work, no matter what it is, to your local church or to a ministry, if all your checks are going, and I know we're in tough times with the inflation mess and everything else, but still, God loves a cheerful giver. And even the woman who gave 2 cents, Jesus applauded. So maybe that's all you can afford is a nickel or a dime or whatever it is. But if your checkbook is always about the stuff or pleasure or having fun, and there isn't any giving to others in there, that's not a good sign. And so the things we do show what our real priorities are, what we really love. Not our talk. I mean, you can go to church and you can say the right Christian words, and you know, you can play the Christian game, but the other almost 7 days a week, it's your actions that prove out if you really love God, if He's really first in your life, and what that looks like. And your checkbook is a part of that. Your checkbook is an expression of what's valuable and important to you. So where are you at that? And the big thing is here, don't assume you are one of the 10% or the 15%. We have the benefit of the Bible, so we can look back on that story with Caleb and Joshua and say, yeah, I would be one of the two. But they didn't have the Bible. They were living this out moment by moment. And Caleb and Joshua, they were like, yeah, let's go. God's with us. Those guys had a faith born of intimacy with the Lord. You just can't have that if your whole faith walk is sitting down and listening to a sermon, going home for the rest of the week and doing your thing. We have to be all in. It doesn't work any other way. And so we have to take a hard look at our life. What do I really love? What am I really spending my time with? Not just the money, but what are you spending your time with? And what are your real priorities? And where's your heart today? Do you love prayer? Do you love being alone with God? Do you love soaking in His Word and in His presence? Do you know how to connect with Him? Has the life of the truth gone beyond your heart to your, backwards, from your head to your heart, Some people are like what I call head Christians or doctrine heads, where they can quote all the right verses, but when it comes to really having a vibrant, passionate love relationship with God, they come up dry. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. So where's your heart right now? This is one of the most critical questions that we have to answer every day. Is your heart hard or dry or numb? And you can find the life you're looking for, but you're not going to find it in the stuff of this world, the pleasures of this world. And sometimes not even going to church, because we're hungry. We're hungry for more. And the way this works is the more we go after God, the hungrier we get for him. And then the more we want to go after him, the more we want to pray. But if we drift or play games or, you know, we're immersed in the stuff of the world, or we're spending hours on YouTube or in the news, then what happens is our thirst for God shrivels up. So the less we have him, the less we want of him. And that's why this is so very dangerous. And we have to ask these questions. Well, am I today one of the two or one of the 10 who freaked out in fear? Do I have boldness today? Do I have an all-out love for God? Am I all in for him? Is he really my top passion? Or am I just playing Christian games, as so many are? What are your idols? What do you worship? I'm not talking Sunday morning. I'm talking during the week. What are you giving all your time to? Do you go to prayer? Is prayer just kind of a two-minute thing? I've mentioned this before. I saw one survey that said that the average American Christian prays 1 minute a day. And you know, you can't always bank on every survey, but I've seen enough of other surveys that it may not be far off. So whether it's one minute or if it's 5 minutes or even 10 minutes, that's not a prayer life. We have to be going after God. You know, we're commanded, pray without ceasing. So that's an ongoing thing. But with so many people, prayer is like the last thing they turn to when their life bottoms out. And fortunately, we serve a God of grace and mercy. And many times he does come through when we're panicking. But sometimes he doesn't. He's quiet and we have to wait. And I think that whole waiting thing is some of the wait on the Lord. That's hard sometimes, because I want my answers now. I want what I want now. And wait on the Lord means sometimes being content with silence, or being content with not having his answer at this moment. But sometimes wait on the Lord means going after him hard. Sometimes he may be saying, do you really want me, or you just want what I want to do for you, or you want me to do for you? How much do you really want me? How much do I really matter to you? Love the Lord your God with all your mind, all your heart, all your soul. That's wholehearted. That's giving everything to God. But sometimes I think we set the bar so low at church. I want to be challenged, man. I don't want to walk out of church with my comfort zone and my comfort bubble intact. I want to be challenged to go all out. I don't want to just hear a pleasant, with all the ends, loose ends tied up, message and go home. And man, I want more than that. I want to have as much as God as I can. But you know, sometimes we all get sideways. We all get sidetracked. We have to challenge each other. And you know, you read through the New Testament, you see that Jesus didn't play games with the lukewarm. He would hit some people with the truth. And then there's nothing after that. There's no pleas. There's no pleading. He just looks at them and then they walk away from him. So we have to decide what we want out of life. You can't have God and the world. You can't have God and 2,000 hours of pleasure and entertainment. So, my friends, go all out. Decide what you want out of life. Pour yourself into prayer and pour yourself into your relationship with God and make your purpose to live your life in a way that counts for eternity. So thank you for joining us, my friends, and we'll see you next time. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org, email us at email@blazinggrace.org, or call the office at 719-888-5144.